Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the TV producer Biddy Baxter, a broadcasting legend. She was in charge of Blue Peter for 23 highly successful years. Responsible for the coveted Blue Peter badges, multi-million pound charity fundraising appeals, and a nationwide lust for something called sticky-backed plastic. Her masterstroke was getting the young audience involved, although the programme's weekly postbag of around 7,000 letters must have given her a few headaches. In spite of some early careers advice that no one from Durham has ever got into the BBC, her determination to make a career in broadcasting won out. And across the decades, her steely reputation kept the show at the top of the ratings and steered it through quite a few mishaps and the odd spot of scandal. She says simply, it was an exercise in trying to make children feel as if they belonged. So, Biddy Baxter, you make that idea sound very simple indeed, but as we know, there are entire corporations dedicated to that ideal these days. What was your strategy?
Well, the beginning of the strategy was a symbol. I got in touch with Tony Hart, young, up-and-coming designer, and he designed the galleon. I mean, it's now everybody has logos.
Yes.
But it didn't happen then. And we said that this ship has got to be on absolutely everything, the writing paper, the fan photographs, in the studio. So the programme is synonymous with the ship. And I suppose you could make the analogy, if you wanted to, that the programme was going off on a voyage of adventure. But it was just a very good symbol.
Your name is synonymous with Blue Peter, so much so that when I told people I was coming to speak to you today, they said she's still does it, doesn't she?
Oh dear,
many,
please.
Many years since you've done it. We're going to talk about what you brought to the programme in some detail later on, as you would expect. But I'm wondering what the programme gave you.
I just felt very, very, very lucky and doubly lucky. Well, trebly lucky, really. I mean, the viewers who made it. No point in not using their ideas. It had to be their programme. Absolutely terrific production teams. And the presenters, we've had some brilliant presenters. So all together, I think that's the answer.
And of course, they had to be up to doing it live. Live was such an important part of the programme, wasn't it?
Enormously important. I think psychologically, everybody, it puts everyone on their mettle. And it's hazardous because if disasters happen, which they do happen, you can't go back and do a retake. But worth it because all the adrenaline is working.
Speaking of disasters happening, of course, I've got to ask you about little Lulu the elephant, who made her presence felt. You're rolling your eyes. Do you get sick of talking about Lulu the elephant?
No, I don't. But it was all... I feel so sorry for poor Smithy, the keeper. I mean, Lulu was a baby elephant.
Yes.
Of enormous strength. And Smithy, her keeper, was a tiny, rotund gentleman. And he came with this absolutely horrendous stick with a sharp metal spike on, like a spear. I said, I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Smith, but you can't have that. You know, we can't, you just have to put it away. So that was taken away from him. So, of course, when it all went pear-shaped, because they gave her water, the presenters,
yes.
And first of all, she urinated, which melted the floor paint and made it like an ice rink. And then on top of that, she defecated. And Smithy was so upset. He was
He was more than upset.
Oh,
he went skidding through it, didn't he?
Yes, of course he did. I'd forgotten. Yes, that was the coup de grace.
Did you know it was television gold, or were you worried?
I wasn't worried at all.
No.
I thought, well, you know, that's life.
I'm sorry for laughing so much, but just the memory of it makes the tears run down my face. You haven't chosen Barnacle Bill, which was, of course, the theme tune, still is the theme tune to Blue Peter. You're a passionate music person. How have you gone about choosing your list?
I've chosen with huge difficulty, but I'm sure all the castaways find it hugely difficult. And it's really music that's meant a lot to me. And that's why my first choice is the Ceremony of Carols, the Benjamin Britten. We sang that at school. I was in first the junior choir and then the senior choir. And we had a harpist, Maria Kuczynska, who was very, very talented and well-known in those days, who accompanied us. And it was just magical.
Your first choice, Biddy Baxter. It was Deo Gracias from Benjamin Britten's Ceremony of Carols, sung by the choir of St John's College, Cambridge, conducted there by George Guest. I said in my introduction, I used the word scandals, and I used that sort of in quotation marks, really, because during your time there weren't any huge scandals, but there was a fair kerfuffle when you had the presenter Janet Ellis on, and she became pregnant and she wasn't married. Were there actually complaints to the BBC?
Yes, there were. Absolutely no complaints from children. It was adults. Oh, and a few rather snotty elderly teenagers who were being a bit holier than thou. But, I mean, the programme wasn't intended for adults anyway, so it didn't really matter.
I think that people, when they think of Blue Peter back in the 60s and 70s, they do think of it as being rather stuck in a time warp, and in no sense is that true. Blue Peter was actually pioneering in very many ways. At one point you had the Blue Peter baby on, I think was that at the beginning of the 70s, and the people who were charged with looking after the Blue Peter baby were very much the boys.
Oh, certainly. It would have been fatal to have given the baby items to the girls. I mean, 8-year-olds and 9-year-old boys would have switched off in their millions. So, no, that was deliberate and quite right, too.
Were you always conscious of that, of pushing the barriers forward?
No, not particularly. Really, first and foremost, was using their ideas. And we had this correspondence unit. All people who won badges were done on an index, and then all incoming badge-worthy letters were checked against the index. So we could say, oh, dear Kirsty, the last time you wrote to us was in 19-so-and-so-and-so. Your guinea pig had a bad paw. We do hope he's better now. And it was very, very important because I'd had this dreadful experience with Enid Blyton.
What had happened with Enid Blyton?
Well, I wrote to her when I must have been about 6, I suppose. And I had a reply, absolutely wonderful, and best day of my life. And so, of course, typical small child, about 3 weeks later, I wrote again. I had the identical reply. And I remember bursting into tears and going to see my mother and saying, she doesn't remember me. So that was something that I was so aware of with the Blue Peter badges. And we had this correspondence unit and we tried to not send people duplicate letters.
It's time for your second disc now, Biddy. What are we going to hear?
Well, we're going to hear an excerpt from the St Matthew Passion.
And why have you chosen this?
I've chosen that because when I was a child, when I was growing up in Leicester, they had a marvellous Bach choir, and every year they put on the Passion in a church that has now become Leicester's Cathedral. And I always used to go, and it was just a magic moment of growing up.
The final chorus from Bach's St. Matthew Passion, sung by the King's College Choir, Cambridge, conducted by Nicolas Harnoncourt. So, Billy Baxter, I think it could fairly be argued that throughout your career you demonstrated an instinctive understanding of what it was that children wanted to see and be involved in. I'm wondering, when you were little, how did you see the world? What sort of little girl was Billy Baxter?
Passionate about nature and the countryside and animals. We always had a dog. We started off, I think when I was born, we had this black spaniel called Bess, and she was very sweet. She let me brush her paws. And then throughout the rest of growing up, we had a marvellous mongrel. And that's one of the reasons why I was very keen to have animals on Blue Peter.
So smart, because of course not every child can have a puppy.
Exactly.
Yes, through Blue Peter they could, really.
A dog for everyone.
Tell me about your mother and father then. What were they like?
They were, I suppose, typical of their era. My father had a lovely voice, and my mother was a very accomplished pianist, so they would sing and play together. And my mother was quite deaf and was told that, you know, by the time she was in her 40s, she would be very, very deaf indeed. And she always used to say to people, I'm hard of hearing, you know, and they would, for about 1 minute or 2 minutes, speak up. And then, of course, they wouldn't. And so she really took refuge with the piano. And when she went to social evenings, people always said, well, will you play for us? So she sat at the piano and played, and that was good.
Being the child of somebody who has a disability can make children very resilient and also quite empathetic. Do you think it had an impact on your character?
It may have done. It was useful thinking of the Blue Peter appeals. And we did do a very successful appeal for deaf children, and I did think of my mother a lot then.
You always used to alternate your appeals, didn't you? You had one that was based on a need at home and then one that was based abroad. And so many charities today, television charities I'm thinking of especially, seem to have learned a lot from that.
Well, I hope so. It was quite deliberate because, you know, we just felt it was important to hammer home charity doesn't begin at home. And we always ask for rubbish, not for money.
Yes, milk bottle tops is the one I always remember.
Yes, oh yes, they're very, very good indeed. We didn't want to discriminate against children who weren't well off. And then we had to work out the statistics for the amount of the rubbish we were collecting that could be sent for the minimum postage.
Let's have some more music, Biddy Baxter. What's next?
I was the last year of school certificate, and the English exam, we were doing Travels with a Donkey, Robert Louis Stevenson, his journey in the Cevennes, and he started off with this donkey from a little village called Le Monastier. And I went to stay with a family at Saint-Étienne, who were quite pleasant, but they weren't the slightest bit interested in Le Monastier and Robert Louis Stevenson. So, big adventure. I went on my own on three different buses to this tiny little village. And lo and behold, it was exactly just as it had been described in the book. And I took photographs. It was lovely. But it was such a tiny village. There was nothing there. There was nowhere to eat, nowhere to have a cup of coffee. And the only bus, there were two buses a day. And so I had to wait for the whole day to get the bus back to civilization. But I'd been there.
Allez, venez, Milord, vous asseoir à ma table. Il fait si froid dehors. Ici c'est confortable, laissez-vous faire, Milord, et prenez bien vos aises, vos peines sur mon cœur, et vos pieds sur une chaise. Je vous connais, Milord, vous ne m'avez jamais vu, je ne suis qu'une fille du port, une ombre de la rue.
Edith Piaf and Milord. So, Biddy Baxter, you were around about six, I think, when war broke out. Can you remember what impact it had on you and your family?
The war was absolutely wonderful. I was too young to be frightened. At the bottom of the garden, we had this awful air raid shelter that my father had built, duckboard. It was always full of water. And getting up in the middle of the night, putting on my little siren suit, and we put on, me and friends, you know, we did bring and buy sales for the Spitfire Fund and for the Red Cross. And it was just very exciting. And I remember I made the I made a piece in the Leicester Mercury. I never liked dolls. I liked teddy bears. And it wasn't a sacrifice. One of my dolls, I put out, you know, as a raffle, prize in a raffle. And I went round loads and loads of houses, knocking on doors with this doll, saying, will you buy a raffle ticket? I mean, can you imagine doing it nowadays? Anyway, the Leicester Mercury wrote this absolutely soppy piece saying I'd sacrificed my favourite doll. And it was my first disillusionment with the press, because I said to my mother, it's not true. I don't like her. I'm glad she's going.
It was useful you learned early, I imagine. What about school? How did you get on?
I was absolutely hopeless at maths. I mean, really hopeless. And I think I mystified staff, because there I was getting sort of 98% in my English exams and 3% in maths.
Were you good at arts and crafts and those sort of things?
I was very interested. Sadly, I couldn't draw.
The reason I ask, of course, is I mentioned the sticky back plastic. That was a central part of the appeal of Blue Peter, was imagining that you could make these. I mean, they were terrifically accomplished, the little models and things that you were making out of squeezy bottles and so on. But do you think that partially that came out of that childhood that was lived through the war, of the sort of, you know, you make do and mend?
Well, it's a lovely thought, Kirsty, but I think perhaps not.
Oh, damn.
I think we had the most amazing stroke of luck on the programme. Out of the blue, a parcel arrived for Valerie Singleton. It was from a lady called Margaret Parnell, and she'd made some absolutely beautiful dolls' dresses. And they were a great success. And Margaret became our Blue Peter makes lady. And journalists would never believe me, but those makes were equal tie with all the action films. They really were. Children are amazingly creative, even if they grow up to be ham-fisted.
You left school then and went on to Durham University. At that point, I mean, women going to university, that was hovering around the 6% mark. How did you find it?
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I was so lucky to go to Durham, because I was reading social studies, and it was a very interesting course. But in the long vacation, you were meant to go and do, you know, work in a factory or work in a hospital. I went to work in Leicester's huge psychiatric hospital. And really, they were terribly short-staffed. And I was sent out. There I was, totally ignorant, trainee, still at university. I was sent out to visit patients who'd been discharged and write reports on how they were coping with life. And these reports went to the doctors.
How completely fascinating. Were you shocked by anything that you found?
I think I took it all in my stride, really. I was so excited that I was doing it. I certainly wasn't frightened.
Let's have some more music, Biddy Baxter. Tell me what we're going to hear next. We're on your fourth choice of the day.
Ah, Carmen. A film was made called Carmen Jones. And I thought it was one of the most thrilling things I'd ever seen on a screen. It was dynamic, it was exciting. I think it would be very good for me on that island, because it might even make me get up out of the sand and do a bit of dancing myself.
I'll tell you why I want to dance. It ain't the sweetness in the music. I like the sweetness in the music. But daddy, why I want to dance. It's something thumping in the bass. I'm bumping underneath the music. That bump, bump, bumping under music is all I need to start me off. I don't need nothing else to start me off. Beat out dead rhythm on a drum. Beat out dead rhythm on a drum. Beat out dead rhythm on a drum. And I don't need no tune at all.
Beat me that rhythm on a drum. Beat me that rhythm on a drum. Beat me that rhythm on a drum. And I don't need no tune.
Beat out that rhythm on a drum from the original Broadway cast recording of Bizet's Carmen Jones. So, Biddy Baxter, tell me, under what circumstances were you told no one from Durham has ever got into the BBC?
Well, that was the appointments officer, Mr. B.E.Q. Smith, at Durham University, and it was the first time Durham had had anyone like that. Anyway, you had to go to see him in your last year, and all the men in my year were being sent on exciting assignments to industry, the arts. And if you were a girl, he had two suggestions. One was a secretarial course, and the other was teacher training. And I didn't despise either of those, I just didn't want to do them. And I was mooching around his office one day and I saw this incredible advert for the BBC. Are you interested in the arts? Do you like people? Do you like something else? I said, oh, Mr. Smith, this is really what I'd want to love to apply for this. And he looked absolutely shocked. He said, oh, Miss Baxter, nobody from Durham has ever joined the BBC. And I went immediately and applied.
You became a radio producer. You were in charge of programmes like Listen, well, producing programmes like Listen with Mother, programmes for school radio. And then you joined Blue Peter as a television producer. I'm wondering why they thought that you had the experience to be a television producer.
I didn't have the experience. I mean, it was miraculous. But, again, luck plays such a great part in one's life. The head of the department said at a departmental meeting, well, this person's coming from the radio. And I didn't know, but practically the whole of the department had applied for this job and were not at all pleased that some ignoramus from the radio had got it. Anyway, he asked a very experienced member of the department, called Edward Barnes, he said, you'll have to look after Biddy, you'll have to show her what to do, because she doesn't know anything about television. And Edward was absolutely furious. But bless his heart, he decided he might as well go along with this. And he showed me the ropes. And then he said, well, I've got a friend who's an assistant floor manager, Rosemary Gill, I'll get her seconded to the programme. And the three of us stayed together working for many years.
Let's have some more music, Biddy Baxter. We're on your fifth. Tell me about this.
Ah, now this is very, very nostalgic for me. It's from Healy Hutchinson's Carol Symphony, and it was used in 1943, Radio Children's Hour, John Masefield's Box of Delights, and it was the theme music. And we also used it in 1969 when a Blue Peter presenter, Valerie Singleton, was asked to switch on the Trafalgar Square Christmas tree lights. We'd filmed a tree being cut down in Norway and being carted over and so forth and putting it up. Then came the magical switch-on day, and it was very exciting.
Andante quasi lento e incantabile from Victor Healy Hutchinson's Carol Symphony, played by the Proarte Orchestra, conducted there by Barry Rose. So, Biddy Baxter, let's talk for a moment then about finding the right sort of, well, it's called on-screen talent. The rest of the world knows it as presenters for Blue Peter. They were utterly crucial to the programme's success. What was it you were looking for in your ideal presenter?
Well, obviously somebody who was totally competent and who was, as they say in the theatre, a quick study, because they only got the script the night before the programme was on air. And because so much information was given out on the programme, there had to be a script. I mean, you couldn't give the audience wrong information. It had to have a script. we didn't have auto-cue for years and years and years and years and years, so they had to learn them. So you had to have somebody who was competent in that way.
Peter Purvis once said that, of you, Biddy Baxter, she absolutely ruled it. I didn't always agree with her views, but she was brilliant.
Good heavens. Did he really say that?
He really did say that.
Oh,
that's a direct
Peter.
Quote.
Thank you, Peter.
But it's interesting that he says you absolutely ruled it. That's what I'm getting at there.
Well, I mean, if you're an editor, you have to be an editor. I mean, you can't please everybody all of the time. I mean, you can't. Everything can't be done by committee.
Tell me about John Noakes, because for so many people, he was our favourite presenter. How did you get on with him? Because he has described you as a very, very difficult woman.
I must take that as a compliment. No, he was superb. John was one of the very best presenters that we've ever had on the programme.
How did you earn your formidable reputation, do you think?
I mean, I'm really shocked. I didn't know I had one. I mean, I can't do anything about it now. But the point is, it worked. Whatever we did and whatever mistakes we made, it worked because we did please an audience.
Everything I've read about you when you're talking about the programme, you seem very mindful in leading your production team that the impact of anything they did on the children had to always be front and centre of their minds. And I've heard you talk about an instance where there was the beautiful little puppy Petra, and the puppy was chosen by a vet, it seemed perfectly healthy, and within a couple of days, I'm afraid to say, it had dropped dead, and you replaced it without telling the viewers, the children. Why was that?
Not a couple of days, within a day.
Within a day.
Within a day.
Right.
Well, it was deliberate because the little thing had only made one very brief appearance. The audience hadn't had time to become fond of it. And I just thought they would be upset, and it wasn't appropriate to cause them that distress. And so we scoured the country and got a duplicate, and it wasn't noticed at all. And I'm convinced we did exactly the right thing.
You'll be aware, of course, everybody's aware that, you know, we live in times that are highly scrutinised now. Do you think you get away with it these days?
I hope so, because I think it's common sense.
Let's have some more music then. We're on your sixth. Tell me about this.
The Schubert. We use this as music for an absolutely idyllic film we made on narrowboats on the canal. And it was also used for the obituary of one of Petra's puppies, Patch, who John Noakes looked after. So I think of the dog when I hear this music. But it was very, very beautiful indeed.
The Allegro from Schubert's String Quintet in C Major for two cellos, played by the Amadeus Quartet, conducted there by Robert Cohen. So, as we've discussed, Biddy Baxter, there was the ship, which would now be called a logo. There was the interactivity, which came via the letters. There were the star presenters. The programme enjoyed such huge success under your tenure. Did you realise at any point during your time working on Blue Peter that actually you were creating and changing children's television in a fundamental way that would last for decades?
No, I didn't, because what we were doing seemed to me so obvious.
And did you ever think, well, I'm just going to trust my gut on this one. I know other people don't think it's a good idea, but I just know it's going to fly.
I mean, we never had any huge arguments about programme material. I mean, I would never have included anything that I thought wasn't going to work or wasn't suitable. The world was our oyster. There was nothing we couldn't cover or didn't cover except politics, which was no interest to children whatsoever. So, I mean, if you can't make a magazine programme work, you're pretty dumb.
You had a reputation for being somebody that fiercely defended your patch. When it came to dealing with people higher up the tree, can you... I mean, you know, you've got that look in your eyes or you're not going to tell me, but please do tell me about what sort of confrontations you had with people, because I'm sure they happened.
No, I would tell you anything, Kirsty. The bosses actually were marvellous. I mean, if they had children, I always used to give them the Blue Peter annual at Christmas. Well, they ought to know anyway.
Softening up technique, yes.
I mean, the big battles we had, the really big battles we had with programme planning, and we fought tooth and nail to have the biggest studios because there was something so dramatic about having studio spectaculars, doing something within the confines of the studio. And we had a lot of rows. But I think, in a way, it was the Chinese water torture technique won because they were so fed up arguing, they stopped arguing.
I've seen photographs of you from the time, and it is very clear that the camera loved you. You also have a beautiful voice and you're very articulate. Did anybody ever try to persuade you to go on the other side of the camera?
Absolutely not. I would have loathed to have gone the other side of the camera. I really, really would. I mean, I know my limitations. I was incredibly happy doing what I was doing. And thank you for being so flattering, Kirsty. You've made my day.
Let's have some more music, Biddy Baxter. We're on your seventh choice. Tell me what we're going to hear now.
Ah, my husband, John Hosier, spent most of his working life in trying to raise funds for brilliantly talented but totally impecunious graduates from the music conservatoires to proceed to postgraduate studies. And he asked me before he died if I could form some sort of trust to provide scholarships, which, of course, I did. And dear Simon Rattle, who'd worked with John, agreed to be patron. And one of these was the classical guitar player, Miloš Karadaglić, who was a winner of the John Hosey Music Trust scholarship. He's now become an international star. And his Albert Hall concert in 2012 was a sellout, which I think is pretty phenomenal for a solo classical guitar.
The Allegro from the Concierto de Aranjuez, composed by Joaquin Rodrigo, played there by Miloš Karadaglić and the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Biddy Baxter, do you ever watch Blue Peter these days?
No, I don't see it. I don't see it at all often, Kirsty, but I do keep in touch with the production team, and they're all absolutely terrific. I admire them very much, and I think they do an extremely good job. Difficult circumstances.
Now, how much of a practical person are you, Biddy? We know that over the years you tried to convince us from behind the scenes that we could make do and mend and that we could build, you know, canoes out of squeezy washing up bottles and so on. But you on this island, how will you cope?
I hate creepy crawlies. I'm just praying that the only wildlife I come across are seagulls and crabs and not ghastly insects. I love food. And I'm sure the desert island diet will be good for my figure, but as there'll be nobody there to look at it, I don't think I'd be very good on a desert island, to be perfectly honest. And I really would miss people.
Let's have your final choice of the day, then. Tell me about this, your eighth disc.
This is from the magic flute, and it's the Papageno duet. And this would make me laugh, it would cheer me up, it would remind me of John, and it would make me happy.
Bist du mir nun ganz gegeben?
Nun bin ich dir ganz gegeben.
Du so sei mein liebes Weibchen.
Nun so sei mein Herzenstrieb.
Mein liebes Weibchen, mein liebes Weibchen. Welche Freude wird das sein?
Welche Freude wird das sein?
Wenn die Götter uns bedenken.
Wenn die Götter uns bedenken.
Unsere liebe Kinder schenken, unsere liebe Kinder schenken, liebe kleine Kinderlein, Kinderlein.
Kinderlein,
Kinderlein, so liebe kleine Kinderlein, so liebe kleine Kinderlein. Ist eine kleine Papageno,
dann eine kleine Papageno,
dann wieder eine Papageno,
dann
Papageno.
And that was the Papageno duet from Mozart's Magic Flute, played by the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted there by Sir Simon Rattle. So, Biddy Baxter, I'm going to send you off to your island now, all alone. Aside from the music, you'll also have the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you get to take another book too. What will it be?
I think I will go for a book called Traveller's Tree by Patrick Leigh Fermor.
Right, we shall give you that. And a luxury too.
Well, can it be food?
It cannot be food.
I can't have dripping toast. What I really want.
Oh, gosh, now you're staring at me with those great big blue eyes.
It's not expensive.
Dripping toast.
With a jelly bit of the dripping.
All right, then. I'm going to get into trouble for that, but you can have it. And if you had to pick just one of the eight to save, which one would it be?
Well, that's a nightmare question, but I think probably the Schubert. It would calm me down.
It's yours. Biddy Baxter, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
A huge pleasure, Kirsty. Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.